thank you very much for having us. We just talked about it, that the air here may be a little bit dense. I don't know. Excuse me?
Sorry about that.
No, it's fine, it's fine. So we would like to hear some questions from you guys so we can mix up a little bit. We've had some good conversations in the back room here. But yes, let me briefly introduce the two guests in this fireside chat. Anne Worse is a good friend. She's also the head of investor relations at Ultimovax. She led Innovation Norway's office in Silicon Valley and founded the Nordic Innovation House. Back in Norway, she headed Bachner Beck's investment arm. She is also an angel investor. She is also in the Antler program as a mentor.
Venture partner.
And she has extensive board experience. She was also part of the board in Kro, you know, the app that was acquired by Storebrand from Formuesforvaltning, now called Formue. And she is here to share her perspectives on what we can learn from investors and startups. And speaking of startups, Erlend Presgaard is the co-founder and CEO of Working Group 2. Before that, he was stationed in Bangladesh as the head of strategy and VP of innovation at Grameenphone, which is a Telenor-owned company. And on this, more or less, the story is more or less like this, but on his way home back to Norway, he asked the Telenor CEO, Sigve Brekke, if they could build this company that would revolutionize the telecom industry. And Sigve, I know you can't say that, so I will say it. Sigve, without quite knowing what Erlend was talking about, said yes. And that marked the start of Working Group 2. So thank you very much for being here, Erlend. Okay, let me start with you, Anne. According to the late innovation guru and Harvard professor Clayton Christensen, there are nearly 30,000 new products introduced each new year, and 95% of them fail. I don't know if these numbers are correct or not, but I think we can agree upon that the majority of initiatives fail. So why should you do corporate venture if it's most likely to fail?
I think Kristin just answered your question. Because without that innovation, without Finn and Morlevering and all the others, it will, I mean, what still be newspapers on paper. So especially if it's an industry that is where there's a rapid disruption in business models or technology or these kinds of things are driving the development of the industry to maintain your position and also utilize the advantages as a corporation. I think you know corporate innovation is important.
Yeah.
It's key.
So let's just maybe clarify a couple of terms here. So you have corporate innovation, which is like innovation in the corporate, and then and you have corporate venture or corporate venture capital or CVC as they call it, mm-hmm. which is the act of actually funding or being an investor in startups or other companies, and then you have corporate venture building, which is more of a building a corporate within. Building a startup within the corporate or a company within the corporate. So I asked you about corporate venture. So okay. Kristin here,
yeah,
she is who was on just before us.
Yeah.
That's corporate venture.
Yeah, you mean Shift the Venture?
Shift the Venture.
Yeah, right, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. But the Finn initiative or the classifieds is mm-hmm. maybe a corporate venture building in a sense. And you, Erlend, you are the CEO and the co-founder of Working Group 2. How would you characterize your company?
What we were? That was a mix. So I think it's a bit like Finn, right? It was a structured internal initiative to innovate in a corporate. That's where it started. And then it became clear that if we were to gain global dominance, That wasn't going to happen for inside Telenor. And it became, I guess you could say, corporate venture. We, you know, we went out and funded, and Telenor remained a big owner in the company. Yeah, so I think it had stages to it. But it started firmly as corporate innovation, I would say, and corporate innovation more than venture building, I would say. Mm.
So if you were to pitch your company in one sentence, what does it actually do?
That's always fun, isn't it? No, it's a bit like you have Android for smartphones. We build Android for mobile networks. So we do it one level behind your phones, but actually in the networks themselves is a way to think about it.
Okay. Can I ask, would you have started it if the company of Sigve said no?
I think we talked. It's a good question, right? Because so what we build is critical infrastructure. It's the mobile core network. So if we go down, your phones don't work. So then you can call me. Well, some of you can. We don't have global dominance quite yet. But it's critical infrastructure. And selling our product to an operator is like, that can take 2-3 years. So our first deals, they took almost 3 years to complete. So it's not exactly a venture-friendly space, right? Because you can't track sign-ups and you can't track traction.
Like hypergrowth?
Yeah, there is, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's more like skydiving growth. You know, suddenly you go from 0 to 100 and then there's huge steps. So the point is the appetite from the traditional financing space of venture is very difficult.
Yeah.
So it's actually a space that is suitable for someone who has some sort of understanding, patience, and a special interest, I would say. So I think the answer is actually no. I don't think we, with our backgrounds, we weren't savvy financiers. We weren't savvy people who could go out and get funding at the snap of, you know, we didn't know how to do that. So without Telenor, it wouldn't have happened. It's my judgment.
Yeah, but and then without Sigve, it wouldn't have happened.
No, I don't think we needed that support. That would have been the system would have probably killed it. It was individuals that drove it, Sigve and others, Ruza and Morten, and you know there was a set of people, but key stakeholders, they pushed it through.
Would you say that this is a principle, maybe, that if you don't have top level backing, it will never happen?
I think it's an extremely arduous journey, you know, even in any scenario, even with that support. And unless you have that backing, I think it's extremely hard.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so bottom-up initiatives should get backing as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I think certainly when you want to do, you know, big things, and you know, we've spent, you know, significant amount of money. Even in the Telenor context, they start noticing, you know, when you move from before and after the comma, things get different levels of attention. And if you want to do big things, well, sooner or later, it's going to cost money. So then you need that support.
Yeah. So big corporations or companies, they have maybe some strengths and some weaknesses in regarding to building new companies. So what are their strengths?
It depends, of course, the industry and company, but I think there is very often an underutilized asset. It could be, you know, distribution, as we talked about, for Formue. They had a great methodology for investment, you know, high net worth individuals' money. But they saw this opportunity that more and more of the investments went, you know, from desktops to mobile. And it also was more an emerging interest from not necessarily wealthy people, but they saw that there's an opportunity to exploit all the systems, the methodology, all of that, and, you know, make an app and address a market customer segment that were not suitable for Formue, and that became Kron. And it's a pretty good example because they kind of utilized everything they had built during 20 years and then just did a spin out that really reached a lot of people with, you know, the great strength they had in, like, they had a legacy of brilliant investment methodology, and that became, you know, available for everyone. Good example.
It's a very good example. Yeah. And while you were talking, I was thinking, because Formue, they created this, like, from a strategic...
It started as, like, an innovation project in the company. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was eventually sold. So it became a financial
benefit.
Benefit, yeah. So So, and the same thing with your company. Mm. It was created inside Telenor, but it was eventually sold, or in the process of being sold to Cisco. So there are other ways you can make financial investments, aren't there?
Right. And it's also interesting, I think, you know, we were almost the opposite in the sense that this did not start as a strategic leveraging Telenor strategic assets in the same way, right? Yeah. It wasn't core to them at all. It was the team was actually building something else. And they were so frustrated with how the tech stack looked that they fixed the entire tech stack instead of building what they were trying to do. So it's kind of the opposite. And I think in Telenor's case, the asset was actually people. They had an abundance of talent after Comoyo, after a big initiative that was shut down. They had lots and lots of good engineers. Mm. So their key asset in this was actually people. Mm. And I think finding these gold nuggets, they can be completely different things, right? They can be patience, they can be people, they can be physical distribution, they can be 10,000 base stations standing around in Norway. But I think every company has them. Finding them is just the key, and then being very persistent and conscious about what your advantage is. Wow.
And also, if I can just build on that, like not see it as a threat that someone else, like a very different type of organization, is trying to utilize your distribution system or your methodology or your talent.
But so every company that are going into building a new company, do they need to know or identify their key assets? Like, do they have to have some sort of key assets, some sort of leverage in terms of building this company? Or can anyone just do it without knowing this?
I would almost maybe turn it around and say every company is guaranteed to have some asset.
Yeah.
It's almost like your personality, right? If you're good at something, you're probably bad at the flip side of that thing, right? If you're extremely driven, maybe you're, you know, not great to be a patient talker, or if you're extremely smart, maybe you're arrogant. I mean, every asset has a flip side. And I think every company, you know, if you're small and stressed, okay, maybe you're willing to take risk. That's your asset. Mm. If you're huge and have muscle, okay, use your distribution power. I mean, so I think there's always assets. It's just figuring out what they are and being patient with leveraging the asset that you have. So
you mentioned one asset, people.
Yeah,
but another asset for your company was Telenor being your first customer.
Yeah,
that's a
huge one for.
Yeah.
That's very specific to that industry, right? Because selling a core network from an unknown vendor, so it's like selling a health system or a core banking system. You're not going to go to DNB and say, "Hey, we're a startup with 5 people. Can we please replace your core banking system?" It just doesn't happen. But DNB can be its own customer. That's a huge asset. And especially in that industry and those types of industries with critical infrastructure, that's like a huge asset.
First customer.
So people, first customer.
Those were the two big ones for them.
In your case with Kron, it was methodology.
Yeah, it was also the, it was like a proven methodology through 20 years. It was also, very strong skills in some of those more like heavy lifting things like compliance, a very good knowledge about like the regulatory authorities, financial regulatory authorities, a very strong standing within that community. And also, fun fact was that a lot of the employees in Formue became Kron customers, which is, and they were like very demanding and very supportive at the same time, which was amazing.
How many here knows Kron?
Let me know. Oh, perfect. Yeah. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was acquired by Storebrand, but it's still great. And it's still great. Yeah.
And it's still great. Yeah. Okay. So I introduced this with saying that the most projects fail.
Yeah.
So, but what type of, what is the, how do you, if you were to find the project that succeeds, what do they look like? Do they have any similarities?
I think we agree there.
Yeah, I think, so Telenor again is kind of interesting because their big project failed, Comoyo. Yeah. That was an expensive big project. And then that turned into, I don't know if anyone here was part of that journey, but probably...
I think actually Kristin, who was speaking here earlier, was part of that journey.
She was part of that journey, but it was tens of projects, whereof Whereby, which is a peer-in, used to be a peer-in, now Whereby, that became a project, and we came out of it. And then some Viloid? Bits and pieces.
Viloid?
That was before that, I think.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
Tidal?
No, that was not. That's actually more Schibsted than Telenor.
Okay.
That's also my old job. I think. First of all, it failed. It was kind of seen as a failure, the big thing. They now got their money back in unexpected ways, I think, right? And then in terms of what worked and didn't work, I think that was largely people-driven in that context.
Yeah.
It was individuals that really, really wanted to make it happen,
yeah,
and that had the skill set to do it.
And that's my answer as well. I think that just as a typical startup, these corporate startups, may pivot quite a few times, and maybe even what you thought was an asset could turn into something else.
Yeah.
But I think it's always about the people. Someone who really wants to build this is super motivated, fine with skipping the fancy lunch at the corporation and just go rogue and build something unique.
That sounds romantic.
It's super romantic. Very highly. Wow.
It's like the cliche of a startup, and in a sense. What does the first team look like? Like are there any companies here who are building new companies? Can you raise your hand if you're part of?
Perfect. Yes.
Yes. So, for them, what does the first team look like?
I think that. The typical journey probably is like they starting with someone on your payroll, like you or like our team in our case, that really wanted to do this. And then we had like very good experience with pretty early hiring external people with more not that maybe the corporate legacy or I have to say that the team from Formula was great. But, when we got like external talent with like super fast speed, very like hyper growth oriented, and also when we spun out the company and we had we were like a few external board members were almost there to keep the Formula management just say, you can't say that, these guys need the autonomy and that kind of thing. We had really good discussions, so I'd say a mix, because the people from the corporation will also balance the relationship with the mothership in a better way, most likely, than some external will do. So that's my, I think, general recommendation. Yeah.
Yes. And I think, I would look for, I think we talked about it a little bit earlier, I would look for spikes.
Yeah.
So I think, again, everything is contextual. So I think every company is different, and you need to respect the differences of each company. But I would say, in general, it's hard, it's difficult, and it's going to take longer and be harder than people think. So you need an unfair advantage in some shape or form.
Mm.
And on the people side, that unfair advantage should come from somewhere. And what somewhere is depends on the situation and the company. Sometimes it's just pure drive or analytical skill or selling skill or whatever. And for us, it was technical skill, right? So our entire, I was the only non-engineer in the entire startup for a long time. So we had a very, very hardcore engineering talent that understood telco tech.
Mm.
And that was our unfair advantage in those early days.
Mm.
Still is.
Yeah, because when you said spike, what do you mean by that?
So an uncommon trait in the team with a skill set. That
like a superpower?
Yeah, kind of a superpower, which can be very technical and foggy. What would be the English word?
Professional.
Yeah, it's like a professional skill that I understand telco protocols at its most obscure level.
Mm.
But it can also be things like drive or salesmanship or whatever, right? So I think it can be any sort of spike as long as it's relevant to the context that you're in.
Mm.
But if there is no one with those spikes, then I would get nervous very fast.
Yeah.
But if you think the same team would have joined a startup with like funding for the next 6 month period, and then we don't know what's going to happen, or do you think like the whole backing from a financial strong?
So there's a fun story to this, which is we were about 10 people, and we were taking all 10 with us, and then on the day before exit, five of them said, "This is too risky for me."
You mean exit from Telenor?
From Telenor.
Okay. Is it then exit? Okay.
Yeah. So at exit, because we were 10 employees, we wanted to do this more or less. And then on the day before exit, five of them said, sorry, I'm backing out.
Five?
Yeah.
Half
the team basically said, hasta la vista, which was interesting.
Yeah.
And then I try to have this, you know, very rational discussion about what's really risk and like a meta discussion. And, you know, I can't remember, 12, 18 months later, their jobs were no longer there.
Exactly.
And ours were. Yeah. And then, but the opposite is also true, right? Yeah. My point is risk is relative. So those five that joined, yes, they would have gone for 6 months funding. But the five that didn't join, they would not have.
So they had the spike.
They had the risk appetite and the spike, I would say. Yeah.
Okay. So, okay, let's say you have this team. Is there a type of culture you should develop?
You need to move, I think, generically, you need to move fast, right? So you need trust, you need distributed decision-making, you need speed, you need autonomy, you need trust between board and management. Those are must-haves, right? It will not work unless you have those things. And then you need a ton of other things, but at least I think that's...
So let's talk about governance. How do you, or how does the mothership govern the small company?
Yeah.
Should it be on the, like, on 24/7 asking for KPI reports, or
yes
okay, let's move on.
I think that the word that you said was, you know, the trust is kind of a key thing here, but there's not like one answer to this. I think the mothership needs to decide, like, what do we want out of this investment, and time and money and people and everything, and then what do the new co need? And I think we agree very much that most likely, if you're building a company with a very different culture from the mothership, you guys probably need to move out, spin out as a separate company, and then,
and physically as well.
Yeah.
How important is that?
I think if it's like culture driven, like, for example, in Kron case, it was, you know, B2C is very like fast. Speed was of the essence, and also tech, the product, like product thinking was very key. And they needed kind of their space to build their own culture. That was totally key. And they're still have that kind of space in Storebrand today as well. As in their DNA.
Yeah. So autonomy and physical.
Yeah, physical autonomy as well.
As well, yeah.
But there's a every mothership's, you know, there will be a time, point in time where they ask, should we keep funding this?
Yeah.
Or should you be on your own?
Yeah. And we talked about this earlier, right? That we did a couple of very conscious things. With Telenor, took a minority stake, which meant a couple of important things. You got away from some of the corporate governance of a huge international corporate. Mm. You got away from consolidating the financials, which is a hidden gem that can have some serious impact at some point, and a few other things. And I think it's important to remember, and I was interested to hear how Famous Folding was doing that, but it's, you know, it's not a person. It's a system, right? So you have a system as an owner, and that system is not a static system. And if you're doing a startup over a 5-10 year journey, you should reflect on, you know, if the system changes, how does that change your situation? Because Telenor's priorities have not been constant over our journey.
Exactly. Right?
That could be growth here, and then suddenly share prices do X, Y, and Z, and suddenly it's profitability, and suddenly it's cash flow, and suddenly it's, you know, something. And this comes back to the senior sponsorship, that you need to go through the trough of your corporate owner, especially if they're listed. You know, they'll have a certain dynamic to them. And going, you know, finding this stability through the ups and downs of your corporate owner, I think, is important.
So, and how important is it to have then external partnerships or external funding or the potential for external funding?
Yeah. So for us, I think it had several effects. So Telenor didn't exactly know what to do with us, right? Telenor wasn't a spin-off factory. It was an innovation factory, yes, but not a spin-off factory. So they didn't know quite what to do with us. But having someone go in and say, we're willing to bet new money on this, that gave them the confidence to say, okay, I'm off, you know, then I accept. So it had a big thing in creating confidence. That was a big one. And then it creates a certain discipline, right? So the day, we have a 6-year anniversary today, and I say that the day we left Telenor the day after, And ever since then, it's, you know, it's been a knife to our throat. It's been a very, very different discipline around nobody feels safe, right, in that regard. Yeah. We try to encourage psychological safety, but not encourage so much financial safety, I would say. And that produces a drive and a sense of urgency that has been critical for us. Mm. And which I think would have been close to impossible to replicate inside the system.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
I think this context is king. Yeah. I think is incredibly important. That you, as long as you're conscious about what you're really doing and leveraging, that's the most important thing. And then it can be in or out or whatever. Mm. But I think context is king.
Want to say, like, we never had an issue with money. It was even after it was spun out, we had like owners who really wanted to invest in the company, and we were kind of checking the appetite for raising external, especially from international founders. But then it was like an eureka moment where we're like, but it's not funding, more cash we need, or competencies actually. We need a partner with 1 million customers and an unmet need for our services.
Distribution.
And that exactly. And that's when we started to discuss with Zlubran.
Okay, so you couldn't have done this without Zlubran?
We could, but that would probably never be, it'd be so much less efficient. And for what? Yeah. Like, for why? I think this is this was clearly the best solution compared to just...
And is it working now with Zlubran?
Yeah, that's my impression. I have not heard anything else, and I'm still a customer.
That's good. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about incentive structure. So what I mean by that is, should the people building this company have ownership in this company and be vested into this company? You're nodding your head.
Yeah, when we spun it out, the external board members were very clear that we need to have at least 10% for ESOP, like employee stock options program, for being able to attract the future key people that is actually doing the, you know, critical growth of the company. So that was fine with the owners.
Yeah.
So what about you?
You're also incentivized.
Yeah, so we had shares at market prices, and then we had an option scheme. And then I think option schemes are... I don't like them, but they're the least worst option, I guess, maybe. Mm. But they create crazy incentives and they're taxed crazily, but it's maybe the least worst option. So we had mainly options as well.
The other reason to incentivize people is not only for like financial motivation, but it's also for them to stay in the company. So if you have it, we have like both the Kruse Smith model and also,
that's a good one.
You know, shares with a discount, and that was, but it was vested, so people had to stay for at least 3 years, which was critical for us to build the core.
Thank you very much. And now to the moment everyone's been waiting for, fresh air.
Yay.
So you can just head out there. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you, Anders. Thank you. Thank you. Hei, hvis du likte denne episoden, så abonner på den og gi den gjerne en 5-stjerners rating med dine tanker. Hvis du interessert I temaene vi tar opp på denne podcasten, så anbefaler jeg deg å gå inn på skifter.no. Og hvis du mener vi fortjener det, så kan du gjerne støtte oss ved å abonnere på Skifter. Takk for at du hørte på, så ses vi neste uke.